Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're tackling a really significant shift happening in higher education, and we're focusing our lens right here, actually, at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Yeah, and we've got some great source material, particularly a feature from On Wisconsin Magazine that really, well, gets into the thick of
It really does. It feels like we're in a completely new era, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Especially when you think about how fast artificial intelligence has just boom entered the mainstream.
Right.
Things like ChatGPT arriving, what, late 2022? It basically drew a line in the sand for students. There's a definite before and an after.
Yeah, a huge dividing line. And the article brings this out through Annika Hallquist's experience. She was a sophomore then.
Right.
And her first reaction was, you know, this is just a cheat tool.
A pretty common initial take, I think.
But then pretty quickly, a professor in her machine learning class actually encouraged using it, called it a teammate and tutor.
Which immediately throws up that tension, doesn't it? You've got this amazing potential, these opportunities AI offers, but also these, well, very real worries about learning the basics, the foundational skills, and the ethics of it all.
Exactly. So that's kind of our mission for this deep dive, right? To explore how UW-Madison is navigating this.
Yeah, how they're adapting.
It's
We'll look at curriculum changes, what students are saying, feeling.
even the legal stuff, the philosophical side.
Right. We want to give listeners a really comprehensive picture of AI's impact using this great reporting as our guide.
Okay, so let's dive right into that student perspective then, Annika's journey. What really struck me was how fast she seemed to pivot from thinking it's cheating to almost feeling, well, jealous.
Yeah, jealous of the current students who have AI for those really tough intro courses she had to, grind through without it. But what's interesting is she sees both sides so clearly. She gets the immediate help AI can offer, like getting unstuck on code without waiting hours for office
Which
hours.
is huge.
It is. But she also voices that concern about what gets lost. Those fundamental skills she had to build through, well, struggle and effort.
Right. She called her pre-AI education the best of both worlds.
Having that solid foundation in coding, math, science before AI was everywhere.
And she makes a great point. You want AI as a tool to enhance what you can do, not something you just lean on completely.
Exactly. Which makes you think, how are teachers adapting? How do they adapt?
Well, that brings us neatly to Professor Aaron Aguilar. He teaches Educational Policy Studies 123.
Right. And he's seeing a big shift. He notes students have like zero patience now for professors who just dismiss AI out of hand.
They just see it as part of the world.
Yeah, something education just has to grapple with.
So Aguilar's response is, well, pretty clever. He gets his students to actually develop an AI policy for UW-Madison.
Which is brilliant.
All right.
It forces them to think critically about all the angles.
Totally.
And the way he frames it is key. He tells them, look, every decision you make about using AI, it reveals your basic educational values.
Can you give an example?
Well, the article mentions proofreading. Should AI be allowed for that? If yes, what does that say about how much we value developing that skill ourselves?
Okay. So it's not just about the rule, but the why behind the rule.
Precisely. They're not just learning about policy, they're experiencing the messy reality of creating it. It's about the values embedded in the rules.
That proofreading example really hits home, makes you think about the knock-on effects.
And Aguilar's own policy in his class is interesting. He allows AI for writing,
Okay.
but students have to cite it and reflect on how they used it.
So transparency.
Yes, but then, and this is crucial, he also makes them write essays by hand at the end of every class.
Oh, interesting. Why?
It gives them a direct look at their thinking process right then and there, without any AI filter, a snapshot of their understanding.
That's really smart. A way to assess their actual thinking in this new landscape.
And it leads right into that bigger question the article raises about authorship.
Right. Like, a calculator is one thing, but these powerful AI tools, OpenAI's deep research is mentioned, they really blur the lines.
Where does AI help become?
Yeah.
Well, something that undermines real learning and genuine authorship.
And Aguilar students really wrestled with that. They debated where to draw the line for essays.
Yeah, the consensus seemed to be grammar, punctuation help. Okay.
Aye.
Brainstorming, maybe organizing. Maybe.
Borderline.
But getting the AI to actually write original stuff, that was a definite no.
So they still value the, quote, process of learning and even human error.
Right, that struggle is part of growing academically.
And what was the final outcome of their policy project?
Fascinatingly, most groups actually landed on letting individual instructors decide the AI rules for their own courses.
Instead of one big campus-wide rule.
Exactly. Which shows, I think, a really sophisticated understanding. They saw that different subjects, different goals, might need different AI approaches.
That's quite nuanced, and Aguilar seemed pleased.
Yeah, he felt they moved beyond just cheating is bad to really thinking more deeply about AI's potential role.
Okay, so that's the classroom dynamic, but these questions obviously ripple outwards.
Oh, usually. The article then pivots to Professor Bijard's AI and the Law seminar.
Right, focusing on copyright, data privacy, liability, all the thorny legal stuff.
And Ard's main point is that generative AI, you know, AI that creates new content like text or images, it basically defies the assumptions behind existing legal frameworks.
How so?
Well, think about how it's trained on massive data sets, how models are built in stages. It makes applying old legal ideas really tricky.
Like, if an AI infringes copyright, who's actually responsible?
Exactly. Is it the people who gathered the training data, the developers who built the model, the person who typed in the prompt?
So many layers.
Yeah, and the article points out it's hard to figure out the intent behind any copying, which is often key in copyright law.
And even just registering copyright for AI stuff is a headache.
Totally. The U.S. Copyright Office insists on substantial human control.
Which led to that weird Rose Enigma case mentioned.
Right, where they'd only register the copyright for the bits the human artist did directly, separating it from the non-human expression. The article calls it an arcane decision.
Arcane seems about right. It shows how much the legal system is scrambling.
Which is why Ard's seminar is so vital. He aims to demystify the tech side for law students so they can actually tackle these new legal puzzles.
And it seems to be working. A law student, Zainia Noska, found it gave him new tools and perspectives.
Yeah, helps them navigate this uncharted territory.
Then the discussion shifts again, this time to ethics with Professor Annette Zimmerman.
Right, her AI ethics course dives into some really deep philosophical waters. Like, could AI ever have moral rights?
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, looking at different views, like, are rights just for humans based on our capacities, or could they maybe extend to sophisticated AI?
Where would you even draw that line, especially given the range of human ability?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a tough question. But Zimmerman's course isn't just philosophy. It blends it with very practical, technical exercises on algorithmic bias.
Ah, okay. So how AI systems can produce unfair outcomes.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And she stresses you need both the philosophy, what is fair, and the math, how do these algorithms actually work? She mentions hardcore math topics are involved.
So understanding the stats and data behind the AI's decisions.
Yeah, analyzing data sets for bias, seeing if algorithms accidentally disadvantage certain groups because they're mimicking existing inequalities. It's about the numbers behind the bias.
And this isn't just theoretical, right? The article mentions State v. Loomis.
Yes, a Wisconsin case involving risk assessment software in sentencing. Some hoped it would reduce human bias.
What?
But investigations found it actually showed racial disparities in its risk scores.
Wow. So the AI learned the bias from the data.
It seems so. Mm. It shows how flawed data can just perpetuate or even worsen existing biases. And Zimmerman points out a danger. People tend to just trust computer output.
Assume it's objective even when it might not be.
Right. And Zimmerman's involved beyond the classroom too. AI Action Summit in Paris, she wrote a book, Democratizing AI.
So she's really engaged in the bigger picture.
Definitely. She's concerned that big decisions about deploying AI are being made by just a few companies.
Without enough public input or government oversight, especially in the U.S.
Yeah. And the course clearly has an impact. One student, Lydia Boyce, was inspired to go into AI ethics as a career.
That's great.
Zimmerman's goal, she says, is to help students avoid the extremes, you know, AI hyperism, where it's going to solve everything.
Or AI doomerism, where it's the end of the world.
Right. She wants them to engage in critical, reasoned thinking about it all.
Okay, that brings us to the final piece, Professor John Lee. His work sounds fascinating. Apple sabbatical, NASA research.
Yeah, working on conversational AI for astronauts on deep space missions. Kind of like HAL from 2001, but hopefully less problematic.
Let's hope. And his course, Industrial and Systems Engineering 602, is hands-on.
Very. Students develop their own AI applications. But what's changed is you don't need super deep coding skills anymore.
Because AI tools can help write the code, like Gemini.
Exactly. So Lee's focus shifts more to understanding what's behind the magic. How do these models actually get built? How do they work?
Makes sense. And his course title, AI for People.
Yeah, that really sums up his philosophy. It's about human-centered design. How can AI enhance what we do, not just replace us?
Mm-hmm.
and thinking hard about the consequences.
He gives that example of the AI assistant dot.
Right, where it starts doing too much, reminding you about mom's birthday. Okay, but then buying the gift too.
It starts to undermine your own, like, agency, the meaning of the action.
Precisely. Over-automation can erode the human element.
He also tackles AI hallucinations, right?
Oh, yeah, where AI just confidently makes stuff up.
That's a big one.
It is. So he has students actually try to trick AI in class, get it, to cite papers that don't exist or invent speeches.
Like the fake Bill Gates speech at UW mentioned in the article.
Exactly. It drives home that you have to critically evaluate what AI gives you.
Yeah.
It's matching patterns, not necessarily checking facts.
So what's the fix? Or mitigation.
A key strategy they learn is to give the AI supporting documents with your prompt. Ground its answers in actual information you provide.
Okay, give it reliable source material to work from.
Right. And Lee admits even he's been awed by what generative AI can do now. He mentions an AI creating a podcast episode just from his syllabus using Google's Notebook LM.
Wow, that's impressive. And maybe a little meta for us right now.
Huh, yeah. But Lee also brings up a crucial point about literacy. He was worried some students were avoiding AI.
Out of fear, like fear of cheating accusations or just uncertainty?
Yeah, partly. But his message is really strong, really direct.
What does he say?
He basically says, AI literacy isn't optional anymore. It's essential for your career. Yeah. He puts it bluntly. I don't think jobs are going to be replaced. But I think people are going to be replaced with people who know how to use AI.
Ooh, that's a stark warning.
It is. But it resonates. Annika Hallquist, who we started with, she hears that message and gets it, understands it.
Yeah. Having seen both sides, the pre and post AI world, she gets the urgency.
So wrapping up this deep dive, I think it's clear UW-Madison isn't just reacting, they're proactively engaging.
Yeah, really trying to foster critical thinking about how to use AI, tackling the legal and ethical minefields.
And ultimately trying to equip students with the skills they absolutely need for what's coming. Or what's already here, really.
It's such a balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah.
Trying to harness the power without losing essential human skills or ignoring the ethical side.
It really is. Which leads to maybe a final thought for our listeners.
Come on.
Considering how incredibly fast AI is still moving, what fundamental human skills do you think will be the most crucial in the years ahead? You know, the ones that matter no matter how smart the tech gets.
That's a really good question. Something definitely worth mulling over as AI keeps changing how we learn and how we work.